Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 324. Well, thank you guys for listening each week. Truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing these episodes to you for free. Only partner with companies that I believe in both the people and the product, and they have a phenomenal product, but they're even better people. So if you're in the market, check them out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them at the next conference that you see them. This week, I'm joined by a former staff member, Brian Burt. He's the head strength coach at the University of North Florida. Just a guy that, Brian, what year were you with us in South Florida?
I was with you the spring of 2008.
So it has been quite some time. He's made quite a name for himself in the field. And man, I'm excited to have you on the show, brother.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Brian, if I remember correctly, I think you played at Springfield and then came down from Springfield, right? And then went to, you've been Hofstra, Salisbury, Rhode Island, maybe a couple other stops in there as you go on. Which stop along that journey has best prepared you for where you're currently at?
I mean, for sure, starting with Springfield College. I can't tip my hat enough to them, the mentors I had there, Dr. Thompson, everybody that I met along the way. For my teammates and then my classmates and the GAs that we had back then, all my strength coaches, everything kind of set me off in the right direction. From there, I mean, it's honestly kind of been Springfield contacts that have continued to help me grow throughout the field. And I think that's what's most important is staying in touch with those people, especially at a young age when you're sitting in class, you don't really realize who's sitting on the side of you and what they're going to become in the future. So making sure you're dialed in on those people and treating everybody right. Obviously it's going to come back in the long run. So starting there definitely prepped me to hit the ground running. And then some of the smaller jobs, I mean, a Division III graduate assistantship at Salisbury, as well as when I was at University of Rhode Island, funds were pretty raw. So I think learning the ropes that way really kind of set me forward to be able to get to where I am today and run a department.
Yeah, I think that's, something you said in there. And I think, as you probably remember me saying, even in the internship program at South Florida, that network of coaches that you develop when you're a young coach, you never know where that's going to lead. I think you probably had, 10 or 12 interns with you during your class. They've all scattered and gone different places. The number of students that you've had, at Springfield College. When you're a young coach, it's hard to think about the network and your peers, but your peers end up becoming, they end up going off to doing great things in the field as well. So it's an important lesson. Brian, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made in the field and kind of how you've learned from it?
It's one of those things where you look 5 years ago and said, I wish I could have done this better or that better. And then I think every 5 years, you're going to kind of look back and say that. So, I'm sure 5 years from now, I'll look back at where I'm at and wish I could have done things a little bit better all the way through. But overall, I think just, continuing to build relationships early on, I may have been on a grind to kind of progress through the field and, get myself to a spot that I wanted to be. But creating relationships and staying best where your feet are planted and, always act the position that you want to be in, not the one that you're in. So, because you never know what the parts that move around you. You never know who's watching you. So, especially as a young strength coach, how you handle situations, even if it's a small school with short staffing, when a lot gets put on your plate and the pressure is on, that's when people observe you the most. And making sure you stay even keeled in those moments and handle things correctly definitely come back to help you in the long run.
No question. I know with this inter-association recommendations coming out, things along those lines, you and I have gone back and forth on email about some of the challenges and some of the recommendations and some of the strategies that you guys have used there at North Florida. Talk a little bit about that, you know, the inter-association requirements as a whole and kind of some of the ways that you guys have gone about addressing those.
Yeah, of course. I think it's a very hot topic out there right now. It's mostly known as best practices, and that's what everybody's hearing about, and then how to incorporate them. Obviously, everybody looks at it differently. We're a smaller school here. We don't have football, and obviously a lot of it was put out from football in the past, but has an effect on all of us, and it's trickling down very quickly. But I try to keep a very positive outlook with it, and you talk to different coaches and everybody kind of has something different to say, but I think it's a very strong empowerment of the strength and conditioning department, and sports performance, as well as sports medicine, kind of empowering our departments a lot to have more say and have things be consulted through us a little bit more, to determine health and well-being of our student athletes. And that's obviously what's most important. Every coach comes from their different background of where they're coming from and their particular sport. But obviously, we possess a set of skills that is very needed. And I think the respect that our departments can get from the best practices is something that's really, really exciting. So basically, obviously, the NCAA put out a checklist of things that the school should be working towards to cover themselves liability-wise in case of catastrophic injury or death. And it's not necessarily rules, regulations mandated by the NCAA at this time. However, obviously legally you want to cover your butt on things and make sure that you do things the right way. So, I think the big question is, where do you start with it? And that's always the hardest thing, especially if you're a smaller school and you don't have the funding. Lucky for us here, it's trickled right down from the president's office, which is big time for us, because then it goes to the AD, and then the AD supports us all the way down. So I think it's starting with legal, making sure that everything's done correct with legal. Involving legal on campus is very, very important, because if the campus knows that they're liable in some sort of way, then they're going to do what they can to fix that. So kind of using that as a little bit of a leverage to kickstart the process is definitely a good thing. And then just assessing the checklist that they gave out. So what we first did was run through the checklist and kind of see where the holes were in the program, and then we present that up to administration and kind of see how we can adapt it from there. Biggest things, as always, and honestly, you know, I took a lot from undergrad is emergency action plans and policy procedure manuals, making sure all those are updated and updated with all the new inter-association recommendations involved, with all the new stuff in it. So having all that updated and doing it as well with your medical network, I think, is essential. Evolving your physicians and your ATs and putting together one big plan is definitely the start of it. And then it kind of branches down. I mean, there's a lot of topics involved in it. They broke it down into six topics of sportsmanship, protective equipment, acclimation and conditioning, emergency action plans, responsibilities, athletic personnel, and then education and training. Obviously, what we dial into most is that acclimation and conditioning. It's a big part of our job, especially in the NCAA athletics. We do have a lot of gaps with winter break and summer breaks and spring breaks and things like that. That, you know, what they're classifying as a transitional period is 7 to 10 days off of physical activity. And then once that happens, obviously, we have to put them through a 7 to 10 day transitional period back into physical activity. So we just try to follow our NSCA guidelines and the NATA guidelines involving that, with our 1-to-4 work to rest ratio within those first 7 to 10 days. But then from there, it really expands drastically as far as impacting sport practices. And what we've done here is create a database on a O-Drive type of thing, where coaches have their practice plans up, and we're supposed to approve them as strength coaches as well as athletic trainers to kind of look over those and make sure if it's deemed a conditioning session, they have the right staff members to be there at that time to cover it. And I think this is where it becomes very, very important and empowering for our department. And it's kind of helped us this year, especially as we've had a staff member get promoted up to full time due to the best practices based on coverage and things like that. So with the new rules, all training and conditioning must be conducted by a certified strength and conditioning specialist and conducted by an employed strength and conditioning coach, unless your school does not employ a strength and conditioning coach. So this requires us to be out at most practices, if not all practices, to be able to run conditioning sessions if our coaches, you know, deem to run conditioning during practice. So we've had a big long process. We created a big PowerPoint of it, presented it to all our head coaches, legal, everything, and it started from there. And then we had a big open discussion with all our head coaches and kind of had an open forum of how we're going to address it. And obviously we had a lot of kickback from a lot of coaches as far as, well, punitive punishment is one of the biggest ones out there of, you know, you can't necessarily just run people to run people anymore out of frustration and anger. It's got to be sound physiological principles and, you know, follow the book on what's best for that sport type of thing. So that's where we play a big role. And I think we've been empowered. So we've done a great job implementing it to where we're at here at North Florida. And obviously we've got a lot of room to grow. But like I said, I try to keep a very positive outlook on this and use it to empower our department as much as we can to continue to grow the strength and conditioning fields. And honestly, it's the direction it's going with performance teams and now new director of performance titles that's taken over. So it's spreading rapidly.
Yeah, a bunch to dig in on that. I think one thing that I'll pull out from what you just said is I think a lot of times coaches look at new rules, new regulations, any kind of change to the apple cart as problematic. But the reality is I think you're taking the right approach where you look for the opportunity in everything, right? And I don't know. I don't think you were there. I don't think it was your class, but I mean, we lost a player at South Florida, you know, and it's one of the hardest things you could ever go through. I mean, just on a personal level, you make such a connection with these players that, you know, now granted, you know, Keely Dorsey had long QT syndrome and it was during warmups and there wasn't a whole lot that, you know, strength and conditioning necessarily contributed to that. But if we hadn't had an emergency action plan, if we hadn't had people on staff, if we wouldn't have had our supplements being checked and all the different things that we did to kind of protect the student athletes ultimately, but also the department and the school, man, I don't know if I would have lived with myself, you know, I mean, it would have been one of those things that, you know, I mean, it was hard enough knowing that we did everything right. Let alone if there would have been a stone unturned. And so, I think looking at the opportunity and making sure that you're doing everything you possibly can to protect your athletes, that's our mindset that we need to be. So now in there, you mentioned a couple of things. One, you mentioned, the department and working with sports med and working with administration and your coaching staffs and things. How have you guys changed the dynamic and the structure of your department to address, to put yourself in line with these, but also that to enhance communication and productivity?
Well, I mean, it's something that I've always been a big component of since I got into the field, and I think it's been emerging, is creating those performance teams. So it's something that I had started, you know, it was in my interview packet of when I first took the job here, and how, you know, obviously you want mutual respect and almost a combination of the two departments between sports medicine and strength and conditioning. So I started initiating it my first year here. Luckily, I have a great administration here that has empowered me and given me a voice to sit up on senior staff and be able to express these needs as far as interdepartment relationships. So we started it my first year with a performance team that we involved sports medicine, strength and conditioning, and we think academics is a very, very large piece of that as well as far as having contact with the kids. And to be honest, one of our first tasks we tackled here was mental health, and I think that's the other thing that's on the forefront nowadays. And just like you had a case there at South Florida, we had cases here in the past with some mental health things, and I think it's across the board in college athletics. You see it more and more on the news now that we've made that a priority from day one, and we created flow charts and involved campus getting in our Brooks College of Health here, working with them, and it took legs so fast that it actually went right up to the president's office. And it's something that a model that we created is actually getting adopted by the whole university for all students here on campus. So it kind of started with that performance team and doing things there and just aligning things the right way. And then moving forward over the next couple of years, just continue to grow it with the sports performance mindset involved with it. We just had a turnover of head athletic trainer over the summer here. And that's when we kind of took a little bit of restructuring within the department. We hired a director of performance, Fred Burnett. He's a great guy. He's overseeing both athletic training and strength conditioning. And he's going to sit in that oversight role to kind of start positioning it and realigning from the top down with administration. So he's got a senior associate title. And then it's going to start trickling down to our staffs and things like that. So that's when our alignment with these best practices started to really fall into place. But just creating a performance team to start with communication and just, you know, spreading ideas for to get information to athletes, to have progressive thought, whatever it may be, that performance team is what ignited it here. And then when the best practices rolled out, I mean, it was very, very easy for us to start just adapting and aligning things. And you know, like I said, there can be a negative outlook on it, but we're super positive with where it's at, and it couldn't support, you know, sports science anymore, and that's what we're excited about.
Yeah, I think it's such an important piece of the puzzle is to make sure that you're connected, and there's open communication lines, and that you know you're having those conversations with your athletes to be able to identify different things, and that's just it. I mean, we're not you know. It's hard enough just to be an expert in strength and conditioning, much less all these other disciplines. And so, you know, having a siloed approach and having it very segmented ultimately goes against everything that we've talked about, why we've gotten into this field, which is to make an impact on young people's lives. And so we need to make sure that we're addressing that in our own teamwork as we preach teamwork to our athletes. You also mentioned discipline early on, you know, and obviously, longer gone are the days of just, you know, going out and running a guy until he pukes for freaking missing a weightlifting session or a class or whatever. You know, what are some of the tactical things that you guys have done to address accountability then? I mean, if you're not able to go out and we know that, I mean, I give a presentation and there's, there's two ways to kind of reinforce behavior, right? One is negative and it works. I mean, negative, it works, but it's going to be, it's not going to work long-term, right? But the better way is to do it through kind of curiosity and joy and positivity. And finding ways to encourage good behavior as opposed to beat it out of somebody, I guess. So what are some tactical things that you guys have done to address accountability?
Yeah, I think this is a difficult one and one we're battling with coaches all the time. And if anything, I think that I've battled from the strength and conditioning aspect of things is, you know, first getting into the field, a lot of times we don't always want to be the disciplinarian. Like if a kid messes up at practice and a coach sends them to us to punish them, that's not really, if they mess up for us, certainly, obviously we punish them. But if it's messing up for a sport coach, you know, does it fall on our plate? And now it does more so. That's a little bit of a downfall to it, but we try to just address it as much and we've looked at a couple different aspects of things, but through a team-based approach as much as possible as far as accountability for the whole team. And I think that's the best standard to start with, that obviously if one person is messing up, then it's a weak link in the entire chain. So we need to make sure that everybody's accountable for it. So I think taking that team approach first is what's most important. And then obviously trying to figure out how to incorporate it because it can't be reactive. And that's what the best practices are saying. So it's got to be documented. It's got to be planned ahead of time and it's got to be written down. So, and reproducible. So how we would address it would be, you know, if we would need to just schedule a conditioning session on a different day, we would just have to add that in and add those hours in the moment makes it very, very difficult. And we get it all the time from coaches. I can't just send them on a lap. I can't make them do this, that, the other thing. And what classifies as you know, punitive or what classifies as punishment, I think that's where it's a little gray area and stuff like that needs to be established on a little bit more, as well as, you know, your team standards and team rules. You know, if it's written down and it's a contract that your athletes sign and agree to, you know, does that get you by some of the stuff? So I think all these things are things that you need to look at, but you know, trying to, what you said is keep that positive influence on the kids. And understanding a cumulative effect and your decisions affect other people, I think is important. So that team or coach first is definitely the best way to do it. And then from there, I mean, if you have the individual cases, I think it's something to look at, and we're definitely looking at as far as how we can do it, withholding playing time and practice and stuff like that. Obviously that's what's most important to them. And I know that's very, very, very difficult for coaches, especially if it's some of your top players, but essentially it's the culture that your coaches should be trying to create as well with the team. So we need to look at standards of team cultures and things like that, and how they want to hold their kids accountable. And unfortunately we're in the age of documentation and doing things right. So, I mean, to kind of set those team standards from the beginning and hold the team accountable for things, even if it's individualized. And then if it is too much, kind of handling it more from that business type approach of doing things the right way, and, you know, separating them if they need to be separated. If it's a poor culture thing, it's a poor culture thing. So I think that's the biggest thing to kind of take out of it is how can you approach the team with it, or is it affecting the whole team?
Yeah, I think I agree with all that. I do think as a profession, you know, and this is where I have a problem with some of this stuff and with the best practices, and, you know, is we're really not getting too many people to have a seat at the table, right? I think in that NCAA task force, there was only one strength and conditioning coach represented, you know, versus I think there was four medical staff represented, and maybe one coaching staff, you know. And so, you know, again, I think it goes back to some of the things we've talked about where, you know, there's different disciplines and there's different roles. And one of the things that makes strength and conditioning coaches great at what they do is their ability to motivate the masses to do things that they don't necessarily want to do. You know, that's not always going to be done with a smile, right? It's not always going to be that way. But I think the thing to pull out of that is the documentation part. You know, one of the things, you know, back when I was at South Florida, I wasn't this evolved afterwards. I grew in this area as a coach, but I was very clear with our team. I would get up front and these are, you know, this is the team rules. And really I had, you know, I just had a late policy and a miss policy. And if you were late, this is what you're choosing to do. And if you missed, this is what you were choosing to do. And it was ultimate accountability. It didn't matter the reason. And, you know, I think if as long as you express those things and you know, I think there is, again, there's you've communicated, they've done, you know, and you can still use some of these tactics that have worked, but you got to make sure that those tactics aren't done in a reactive way, like you're talking about, or in an emotional way, I think is the more important thing. When you're out there dog cussing a kid while he's doing stuff, when emotions are high, then that can turn it, you know, four laps can turn into eight laps if the kid's not giving you his effort or whatever. But if you're not emotional about it and you're consistent about it, and you're like, hey, look, this is what you chose to do, based off your actions, I think now becomes a situation where I feel comfortable enough standing in the court of law and defending that if I had to, right? And I think that's the professionalism that we got to continue to push.
And I think that's, it comes out in sport all the time. And unfortunately I think sport is the most fair thing that you can possibly have. And, you know, wins and losses, you know, losing team runs, can you do that? Can you not do it? Is it punitive? Is it not? You know, I think that stuff is okay as far as, you know, your rules of sport are as fair as they can possibly be. You know, the ball is the same size, the rim is the same size, the bounce is the same. It's 5-on-5. So if they have a loser run, it's got to be a down and back, obviously something within reason, but little punishments like that within in practice, I understand. It's just those, like you said, the reactive and emotional situations that need to be watched.
Agreed. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Best piece of coaching advice I've ever received.
Just remember, you worked for me at one point, so you better. I'm just kidding.
I mean to care. I think that's most important of all. Care about the athletes. Everybody's always said it a million times. I'm sure they've said it on here a bunch of times. Nobody cares about what you put on the program type of thing, and you can write all these amazing programs, but it's connecting with the athletes, and that's definitely by far the most success I've had with teams is creating that relationship that they know who you are, they know your standards, all that stuff, and you're able to work with them and get success out of them.
Absolutely. Here's a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, I'm just going to go with your strength and conditioning book now as far as the short stories. I think it's great. We're actually using it with all of our teams now. We use it as kind of like a mental prep to start our day. So we'll just read a weight room wisdom story of the day. Our kids have absolutely loved it. They look forward to it every time.
That's cool.
As far as an app we use here, I think it's good to put out there is Fugenetics. We use it as a screening tool here. Everybody has their takes on screening methods and you kind of take them for what they are, but we find it nice, convenient, and easy for us to use. And we get a lot of information from it. It doesn't always have to be strictly from the app. We can pull a lot more off of it as well. So it's been a great useful tool for us. As far as websites, I just stay online following a lot of things that people are posting. I think obviously social media is what's booming right now and following a lot of these people on social media that are rapidly growing in the field is very, very exciting and seeing these people grow. You know, looking at Max Marzo from a strong by science point from a long time ago and how much he skyrocketed and Corey Schlesinger and a lot of these guys do an amazing job on social media. So I think staying in tune to these people that are on the cutting edge and using social media as a platform to get this information out there is very, very useful.
Yeah, I agree. Well, man, I tell you, you're probably, getting close to the age that I was when you were an intern for me. Now you're leading your own departments and your own staff. And I tell you, there's nothing better. As much as I got into this profession to make an impact on our athletes' lives, a great kind of byproduct of that was making an impact on coaches' lives as well. And seeing you have so much success and doing all the great things that you're doing, and so many others, it's humbling. It's fun to see, and it's really cool that you're doing so many good things at North Florida. So appreciate you coming on the show and sharing and being a part of this, and keep up the great work, man.
Absolutely, thank you so much. I appreciate all you do and all you continue to do for the field. Kickstarting my career and always helping along the way.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.